Welcome back, or welcome everybody, not welcome back. I'm a little messed up this morning, but my name is Mark Salem, and for the next couple hours we're here talking about car repair problems, car repair issues. What kind of cars do you like? What's the matter with my car? Should I buy my wife a four-wheel Dodge diesel four-wheel drive?
Yeah, that's what I say.
And this is my daughter, Andy. She actually is the person that runs our organization. And so how's that working for you?
Oh, just great.
Okay. In reality, no problems with the staff.
No.
And really no problems with the customers.
No.
And really no problems with the vendors.
No.
What are you complaining about? There's only three parts of our business.
Yeah. It's just honky-dory all the time. Yeah. Yeah. No. There's a little thing called stress.
Yeah. No, and you're
that's
right.
That's brought on by myself.
you're absolutely right. I understand that completely. I am with you on that. I've lived that for a lot longer than
know.
You have. But,
I know.
But aside from that, what I like about you is when you're on the front counter, there's a lot of people that recognize you.
Mm-hmm.
They talk to you
yeah.
and stuff like that. It's almost like you guys grew up together,
yeah.
so to speak. Because, I mean,
well, some of them, their kids watched me, babysat me.
Oh, you're kidding?
No, so or they've seen me since I've been really little, and they've been customers for that long, or you know me more as an adult, or all different.
You know, that's an interesting thing. There is a situation where we have customers that are somewhere in the vicinity of, well, we have 40,000 customers, mm-hmm. but we have Mrs. Wagner, who's number 7.
Yeah.
And then we have a lot of 2-digit, lots of 3-digit.
Sure.
Lots of 4-digits, but the majority are 5-digits uh-huh. from 10,000 and up. We're having our software rewritten, whether you know it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to David Hash, who is our programmer, and he's converting it to SQL Server. And he said he was amazed at the volume of customers we had because he works with software with other entities.
Sure.
And he said it's not, obviously the other places are different, but he says, you know, you have a huge database. And actually, when we do the software reload here in the next 2 months, mm-hmm. we're instead of going back to 2008 to present, which sure. is right now is about 9 years.
Yeah.
We're going to go back to 1991 to present.
Oh, wow.
So we're going to have all the work orders, all the customers. Well, we already have all the customers,
sure.
but all the work orders, all the data, everything. Because I've kept that. And I asked him, can you load that? Will it affect the speed? And he says, no, not with SQL Server. So we're going to reload since day one.
Wow.
So we're going to know exactly when the very first customers came in. And we're also going to be able to tell somebody that your first work order out of 150,000, your first work order was 12.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's going to be
awesome.
There's a lot of history there associated
yeah.
with that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I'm going to go to Brad. He's first. Brad, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mark. Say, I have a 2004 Dodge Ram 1500. It has a 4.7 liter engine, 133,000 miles. Now, over the last year, it's been parked most of the time. So now when it's cold and I go, when the transmission shifts from second to third, it really clunks. It's like it almost goes into neutral and then slams into third gear. So I think you've addressed this before, but I'm not sure if it'd be the same situation with this transmission.
Okay. This is the very best part of my job because we get to interact. And my only question to you is I'll bet it changes when it warms up.
It does.
Okay. All right. See, that's what it's I always have to be able to ask questions, and thank you for not telling me the history of your 04 truck back to the time you bought it, because you've been a perfect caller in the sense that 04 Ram 1500 4.7 liter 133,000 miles, and here's the symptom, boom, right there. So where do you live? I mean, what part of town?
I live on 51 and Cactus.
51 and Cactus. Who we got up there? Where do you work? Anywhere different than 51 and Cactus?
Oh, no, the truck's parked all the time.
Oh.
I'm self-employed.
Okay, all right. Well, anyway, I think that you've got some hard internal seals in the transmission. They're kind of tough. They're hard. They're not real pliable until the fluid warms them up a little bit. And the fact that it goes away is good. There is nothing you need to do right now. But if you promise to tell me the outcome, and I don't know if you're going to be parking in a lot or whatever, but if I were you, I'd go buy a pint of .3 or .4 brake fluid. Do not buy .5. And put a half a pint of brake
fluid.
.3 or 4. They're both the same.
Okay.
And put a half a pint in through the dipstick tube before you're going to go drive it a long place. Now, transmission fluid is a hydraulic fluid. Brake fluid is a hydraulic fluid. But brake fluid has the ability, not 100% of the time, has the ability to soften and return some pliability to the seals. And so what I'm looking for is a change. So if you park it for a long period of time and you get in it and there's no tough shift on the front side, then what are our fans saying? If there's no tough shift when it's cold and it's nice when it's cold and hot, then you're home free. So just half a pint of brake fluid and try it there.
And drive it probably as much as you can.
Yeah, drive it, like I said, do it before you're going to use it a lot. And then if you park it, and pay attention to that. Now, I bet you, too, as we get colder, it's going to be worse.
Okay.
So that's what I'm thinking that you're going to run into. All righty. Well, thank you very much, Brad. Thank you.
We have some intermittent garble going on, and it's only us, so what can we adjust?
Gil, are you hearing any intermittent garbling?
I am.
Okay.
And do you have any idea where it's coming from?
I don't know. You may have to retrain your system.
Well, I'm at 16.8. It retrained from 19.1 just a few minutes ago. Now, how about right there? Is that any different than right there? Is that any different?
A little bit. Something happened.
Okay. So
let's keep it there.
All right. Just a minute. Now, Gil, I'm going to give you this, okay? One, two, or three. What do you like?
I like one.
Okay. So we're going to do one. Is that okay there?
You'll have to keep talking. I'll let you know how it goes.
Alrighty, good.
Along the show.
No problem. What happened is the software I'm using, I'd lost all my history. So I have no idea what my settings were at the very beginning.
Gotcha.
So I wrote them down, and I did them as fast as I could. But I'm quite sure I messed up a couple of them one way or the other. 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto Repair, located at I-17 in Deer Valley. Action Auto Repair is a full-service, family-owned auto repair shop that served the Deer Valley and the North Phoenix area since 1983. Tom, who owns it, has been a friend of mine since 1979. Whatever your repair needs are, Tom and his staff are well-known for quality workmanship, excellent customer service, a fast turnaround time, adhering to their estimates, and promising you that their diagnostic is going to fix your problem. He has ASE Master Certified Technicians. So he's at I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner, Action Auto Repair, I-17 and Deer Valley. Speaking of fast turnaround time, how are you doing?
Doing good.
Oh, and well, what I meant for you, you said something at breakfast this morning. Folks, years and years ago, more than probably 10 years ago, we stopped taking new customers. Mm-hmm. We got to the point where we were so swamped with work. And what created the need to stop taking new customers was we had some of our old customers say, why am I having to wait 3 or 4 days for air conditioning work? Why are there so many people in front of me? Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that's what caused this. Now, we stopped that 2 years later. Did he say it's better? Because if he, just hang up on him if he's giving you trouble. So we stopped 2 years later. And we added to staff, we added to technicians, mm-hmm. and folks, our shop is 20 bays deep. So we staffed up for that. And today, we still hear people that call in and say, are you taking new customers? Mm-hmm. So, yes, we are. We're taking new customers. If you go to marksalem.com, there's a list of the best repair shops. I would strongly suggest that you not drive all over town to find a good one, because there's probably one in your particular area. That's a good thing. The second thing would be is if you have a shop that you like, then stay there. But you can still visit marksalem.com and look at our FAQs. And it talks about how shops talk to you. I think the very best shops oftentimes are the shops that give you a list of stuff you need. And this is how they divide it. This is a list of stuff that you need in the near future. And I've attached prices to it. And I've attached what symptoms I'm going to fix that you have. Here's a list of some maintenance items that you can do in the next 6 months. This is a list of some of the things you're behind on. This is a list of the power steering fluid's really brown. We think it should be flushed. It's supposed to be cherry red, nice and pink. It should be like a tomato juice that's been blended a little bit with water. So it's going to have a pink hue to it. So that's what good shops do.
2 minutes.
The other thing that and obviously they hold us to what we practice, what we preach, right?
Sure.
The other thing is when the shop calls you and offers you a series of, we need to flush your fuel injectors, we need to flush your intake manifold, we need to flush your combustion chamber, we need to flush your wallet of all your money. Here's the great question to ask that is very difficult to answer if there's no symptoms. And that is, what symptoms do I have today that you're going to fix with your suggested whatever? And that's where you're going to get the stumbling and the bumbling, because that's just not the case. I saw a repair order the other day. I looked at a car with 20,000 miles on it, owned by a very old lady. She had taken her car to the same quick lube facility 5 times in 20,000 miles, so about every 4,000 miles. They sold her a $189 injector flush at 20,000 miles. There is nothing about that that is palatable. There is nothing about that that's correct. There is nothing other than the fact that the oil change was kind of cheap, and obviously in order to bring that ticket, average ticket price up, they have to sell people something. It's that way in every industry. It's that way at Bashes and Safeway. It's everybody. They have lowball stuff to get you in and sell you something else. It's the same way in the automotive industry. It's always that way. So the idea is the default is what symptom are you going to fix? The second part is let me pull my owner's manual out and you show me in the maintenance section exactly where that appears. Because I want to tell you something. There's nothing in there about flushing fuel injectors, cleaning your throttle blades, cleaning your upper intake, flushing the back of your intake valves, decarbonizing your engine. There is nothing in your owner's manual. And if you find in your owner's manual that something in there, I will eat that page. I will eat.
Someone please find it.
Really? Thanks a lot, Andy. I will eat that page of the owner's manual. I promise you. So, 602-508-0960. So there, a whole bunch of people are walking out to their cars right now and looking in their owner's manual. But with the show's on tape, so I know exactly what I said. 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. Let's see what time it is. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. And this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Brian and Thelma, who own Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing since 1970. They've been in Mesa. They've served Mesa for many, many years. They have ASC certified technicians. They do a really good job. And more than anything else is Brian and Thelma know right from wrong, and they have the ability to properly diagnose and estimate, repair your car, and fix the problem you ask them to, and still come in underneath their estimate. So that's an important consideration for car repair shops. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley, and Thompson's Auto Repair is the only shop in Mesa I have on my best car repair shops list that you can find at marksalem.com. Let's go to the phones. Keith, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. I've got an 02 Avalanche four-wheel drive, and last week I found a big chunk of rubber laying underneath it. Turns out it's part of a rebound bumper that mounts on the body above the outer ends of the rear axle. Now, I don't do any more four-wheel driving with it, but I was wondering if it would still be a bad idea to let that problem go unaddressed.
That rebound is going to go for the lower control arms, I think, for the bottom parts of the suspension. And as the tire goes up, it actually hits that big round rubber black thing. Is that right? We're talking about the same thing?
Right.
Okay. If you're not out four-wheeling, let me ask you this. What's more important to me is look at the other side. Here's the deal. If the other side looks pristine and the other side has never been hit or damaged and the other side is just almost like it is brand new, then no, I wouldn't do it. But if both sides, if the one side's broken and the other side's beat up real bad, then the answer is yes. So another thing, too, is the question would be, why, if the left one is pristine, if the driver's side's pristine and the passenger side is not, then the question is why not? Is it possible that that shock absorber is bad? Is it leaking oil? Is something wrong with the right side suspension that's allowing more travel on that side than on the left side? And those are the kinds of
the shocks look okay, and I don't notice any ride problems, but I don't know how old they are. They're probably very old.
How many miles are on the Avalanche now?
About 138,000.
Okay. Have you owned it since new?
No, I bought it back in 2010 when it had 125K on it.
Okay, so you haven't put a lot of miles on it at all.
If he's not putting a bunch of miles on it anyways, if he's had it for 7 years and put 10,000 miles on it.
You're right.
I put on about 2K.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put a bunch of money into it.
Yeah, I'm with Andy. I'm not quite sure I'd spend a lot of money. All you've got is a rubber bumper that's fallen off, come delaminated, whatever. The idea is that you put it... You don't have any symptoms other than you saw it, and you're not four-wheeling. So
right.
Given that, I'm going to say I wouldn't do anything if I were you. Now, on the other hand, that bumper's not expensive. It's not like it's a $100 part or anything, and I think it's held on either with the one or two bolts. If the idea is going to bug you to death, then just go get another one. But for the time being, I would go with you to California, and I would feel pretty safe. Besides that, I've never had a car towed in because one of the bumpers is bad. So I don't think this is an issue.
Oh,
safety.
Yeah.
All righty.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
All righty. And let's go to Larry. Larry, good morning to you. How can we help you?
I have a 81 El Camino that has a engine out of an 01 Silverado. It's an LS3 4.8.
Okay.
About every time I get in it, it'll start up, runs, idles down, and then I have no throttle, no gas pedal, doesn't do anything.
What year is that LS3 motor? An 01?
It's an 01.
Well, I can tell you, you don't have throttle by wire. There's no question about that.
Right. I have had computer work done on it in the past, but I don't think I need a new set of eyes on it.
Okay. Well, here, let me just kind of think out loud.
Sure.
Your throttle pedal is directly cabled to, directly linked and mechanically attached to the throttle blades. So the fact that you're giving it gas and nothing happens would say to me that the computer doesn't know you're giving it gas. And if that's the case, it's not going to increase fuel injector pulse width. It's not going to add more fuel. Now, if you give it a lot of gas and it doesn't rev the motor, does the engine die in some short period of time?
No.
Okay. All right.
No.
Is it possible that could this be a transmission problem? Is it intermittent or is it only cold or does it do it all the time?
Usually it's cold. I get in it and it won't run and I get frustrated and go back in the house, drive something else.
Okay. All right. Where do you live?
I live at Poitier and Greenway. I was probably going to take it to Kurt.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And there's Eric and Jeff are there, and those are two what us old guys called young bucks, and they're both master techs.
Right.
But you just tell them you're going to meet with Jeff. He's the service writer, service manager there, and you're just going to tell him Salem says there's not a prayer, there's not a – what's it? How does that sentence go? There's not a da-da-da in hell that they're going to be able to figure this
out.
There's
not a prayer in hell.
There's not a chance in hell that they're going to be able to figure – and that they're going to have to ask Kurt. That's what you're going to say. Because Kurt and I are gray-haired guys. The real question is what the heck's going on? Now, maybe it is going in to drive, and maybe it is slipping, but that would still give you the increase RPM. And you're saying you give it gas, and there's no increase of RPM, right?
No. Okay. No increase at all. It does smell a little bit like it's running rich, but I don't know if that's a separate issue.
All right. And you have fuel injection on it. You don't have a carburetor, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
All right. You take it over there to Jeff, and you just drop that big, drop that big bomb right on his desk and see what he says.
Okay. Do you have time for one more quick one?
I do. Go right ahead.
Okay. The power steering pump whines. And somebody told me that in order to get this engine to fit, they put a different size pulley on the power steering pump. Would that make a difference?
You know, I don't think so. because typically the smaller pulley makes it spin faster, and the problem would, the whine would be at 60, 70 miles an hour and not be below that. Let me tell you what I think. First thing in the morning before you drive the car, I want you to take the dipstick out and look inside with a flashlight, and the fluid be, should be,
okay,
should be clean and red, okay? It should not be foamy. Now, when you drive it and you get the whine, I want you to take the cap off and look inside there, and if the fluid's foamy, then we're sucking air probably through the low pressure line connections, and we're foaming the fluid, which is causing the whine in your power steering.
Okay.
And I can tell you that Jeff and Eric won't find that.
with Kurt's help, they will.
Yeah, yeah. And so the key here is you. You need to say, I looked at it. It's clear, nice, clean. And then when I drive it, about the time I start hearing the whine, I pulled over, I took my flashlight, I opened up the cap, I look inside, and it looks like the head of a root beer milkshake. It's just all foamy. Okay? So you tell them that.
Now, sounds good.
We got pressure coming from the pump that goes to the steering box, and that's a high-pressure hose. Then we have a low-pressure hose returning that fluid to the reservoir, to the power steering pump. And when we, and those clamps are famous for being kind of crappy. So we suck air because the low pressure line is the suction side of the pump. So instead of pulling fluid, it sucks air. So the repair on that thing might be less than $50. So try Kurtz.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Larry. 602-508-0960. Lines are wide open. You got a chance. 602-508-0960. And there is one word. There is one group of words that I know how to say. I don't know, but I've never used them on this show since 1988, so give me a call. We'll be back in a minute. Well, welcome back, everybody. Mark Salem sitting here with my daughter, Andy. Andy's been a part of our business since you were how old?
Born.
When you were born. Mm-hmm. Hey, that's right. As a matter of fact, after you were born, you spent the first, what, 2 years of your life at the shop?
Mm-hmm.
Because your mother wouldn't let you go. We couldn't get you to pump gas, but that was a whole different problem. But
yeah.
Andy actually runs our operation, and she's part of the management team. Her older brother, your most difficult job is dealing with your older brother. Just tell the truth.
Yes, some days. And
some days.
You.
Well, I'm not even there. I mean, not much, but you know, you don't have to deal with me. You can fire me. I'd
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
You can fire me. That'd be a great idea. All righty. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by IMM Auto Service, northeast corner of Tempe, south of the 202, just west of the 101. Now, pay attention to me. David at IMM has been around since 1972. David works on cars that the rest of us are sick that day.
Yeah.
Saabs, Fiats, Alfa Romeos, and Volvos. Now, oil changes are one thing, but I turn on my Volvo, and the windshield wipers flap, and the trunk lid pops open. I want no part of that car.
Yeah.
But David's seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
Not too long ago, we called him on a Saab, and he told us how to fix it over the phone.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a wizard. But he's not going to do that for people that call on the phone. That's not what we do. But shop to shop, we help one another.
Yeah.
Anyway, David's a really great guy, but not only can he do the Saab, the Volvo, the Alfa Romeo, and the Fiat, he can do Honda, Toyota, Chevrolet, Ford, Chrysler. So anything in your garage, he can take care of. So if you live in the area of West Mesa, South Scottsdale, anywhere on the north half of Tempe, then IMM Auto Service is a great place to go. Let's go to the phones. Paul, good morning. Oh, let me give the phone number, 602-508-0960. We have three lines open right now, 602-508-0960. Paul, good morning. How can we help you?
Yes, hi. I have a 2006 Chevy Suburban, and probably about six months ago, we found that the low-pressure oil sensor would come on when we would come to a stop occasionally. And if I put it in neutral and rev the engine, the oil pressure would go up and the sensor, the little beeping noise, would turn off.
Okay.
It didn't happen every time. We brought it in, and they said that the sensor or switch on those go bad. I don't know if it's a sensor or switch. They said that that should be replaced. I had a, I had that replaced by a buddy of mine who's a mechanic, and lo and behold, it still happened. So the next thing they said is the oil pump. And so we went in, replaced the oil pump, and sure enough, it's still happening, and now they're saying that it's probably a bad gauge.
Shemini Christmas. I mean, why did you let all that happen?
I don't know. I'm not a mechanic,
I know.
I mean, at this point, you need to get it fixed, obviously, by someone else. And then you have a little recourse once it's fixed that, hey,
no,
these two repairs
not
didn't
with
fix
his neighborhood
it.
Garage. Not
well,
with his
yeah, that's
garage.
True.
Here's the deal. Here's
that's
the deal.
True.
We just did a full circle. It's the sending unit that talks to the gauge. Let's replace the sending unit. Oh, that didn't do it. Oh, well, that must mean it's the oil pump. Let's pull the pan and replace the oil pump. Oh, and now we're full circle.
Now we're back
at the gauge. So the sender didn't fix it. The oil pump didn't give it sufficient pressure. So now we're going to go to the gauge.
2 minutes.
Do you know what kind of a circle that is? That is a circle you know what.
Right.
I want to tell you something. The biggest mistake at the very front of this deal is any gray-haired son of a gun would have pulled the sending unit out and hooked up a pressure gauge right then and right there, and they would have said to you, Paul, leave it overnight. I want to do it first thing in the morning. So we pop the sensor out of it. We screw in a gauge. The next morning, he starts it up, and boom, he knows what's wrong.
If it's the gauge or sure. if it's...
Yeah, he just knows if there's oil pressure,
sure.
then it is the gauge or the sending
sure.
unit. But if there is no oil pressure, we don't do the gauge. We don't
no,
do the
got,
sending unit.
You got a lot bigger.
We got a big
issue.
Problem.
Issue.
So I don't know what right. motors that Suburban got in it. Is it a small block Chevy, the 350, or the 454?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure. It's just basically your standard two-wheel drive Chevy Suburban. There's okay. not any real thrills to it.
Okay. That's what needs to be done. That's exactly what needs to be done. We need to go back to the sending unit, pop the sending unit out, screw in a gauge. The gauge has a 4-foot hose on it. It has a gauge. The assembly has a 4-foot hose that screws right into your where the gate or
one
the sender's minute. At. We tape it to the windshield, and we just next morning start it up. The gauge is right there, and we look. Now, I don't know which
okay.
motor you've got, neither do you, but there is an oil pump problem with those because the oil pump bolts to the bottom of the engine, and it has the suck, the pickup assembly, they call, where we suck the oil up into it. But it's got a pipe that goes forward, and then it feeds the system, and there's an O-ring in that pipe. And that pipe that O-ring goes bad, so we start leaking oil there. Do you have any idea what the diagnosis is on that?
No, I mean, they supposedly replaced the pump itself and the O-ring, basically all of that. And so basically what they're just saying at this point, or what he's saying, is that the only thing that it could be would be the actual gauge itself, because he did the sensor twice just to be sure it wasn't a bad sensor. And, of course, didn't charge me anything for that. And then just changed out the actual pump itself.
All right. Well, you ask him this question for me, okay? Ask him this question for me.
Okay.
We got a visual and we got an audio, okay? We have two different alarms going off. And he's gonna kill the messenger. And that doesn't make sense to me, okay? You can do whatever you want. But this is a vicious circle that someone's guessing with your money. And if that makes you happy,
right.
go ahead. If it doesn't make you happy, you need a fresh pair of eyes. You need a gray-haired guy on that car. He needs to put a gauge on that. We need it for 24 hours, and boom, we'll know the answer. Now, another thing, I ask you, how do you diagnose that bad O-ring? What we do is we overfill the engine. We overfill the engine with oil, and if the problem goes away, then we drain it back down to 5 quarts, and the problem comes back, and a lot of times we'll know right then and there. But anyway, what part of town do you live in?
I'm in Queen Creek.
You're going to have to come into Thompson's.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to have to come into Thompson's at Stapley in Maine. But you put me in an uncomfortable position, but I don't really have a shop in Queen Creek. I don't really have a shop in Chandler. And those are
right.
two areas that I draw lots of customers from. So I'm at, you know where the IKEA store is on Warner Road and the I-10?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm one
yep.
mile east of there on the south side of the road. So the name of the business
okay.
has my last name on it. So if you want, please call for an appointment, and I can guarantee you this much. I guarantee you, if we tell you what it is and we fix it, first of all, we're not going to be a penny over estimate. And number two, we're going to fix it. And there's a lot of shops
right.
just like me. We're not the only guys in town, but I just happen to be the closest guy to you. So thank you very much. And Russell, you stay right there because I'm going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and get you right away. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, Mark Salem and Andy Salem sitting here next to me. We're both from a repair shop in town, but we're here to talk about the good repair shops in town. Not that we aren't one, but we've got them all over the valley, and we'd like you to visit them because they're a lot closer than I am, and that's the whole purpose. That's why I don't ever really name the name of my shop is because this isn't about me. This is about the really good shops, and I want to make our industry look as good as possible. Christina, we're going to take you because ladies first. Russell, I promise you'll be right after Christina, but Christina, go right ahead.
Thank you very much. Calling about my car, I've got a 2007 Lexus IS250, and I've got a wheel bearing on the left side, driver's side, that's bad. And I've gotten three or four different quotes around the range of $300.
Okay.
Now, I priced it myself, and I could get a warranty part from Penny Pinchers for $60.
Okay.
So I can't imagine that it costs $250 in labor to put a new wheel bearing in there.
Okay, is Penny
Am I completely crazy, or?
Well, there's a big problem here. Is Penny Pinchers going to sell you a new part?
A new part warrantied.
Okay, I know that they're going to warranty, but is it a new part? I'm not familiar with Penny Pinchers. I don't know if that's a recycling yard or not.
They do both. They have both new and recycled.
Okay.
But this is new.
All right.
I asked.
Well, here's the problem.
That doesn't mean they're going to make it.
Okay. First of all, who diagnosed it?
Pet Boys.
Oh, boy.
A pet place called Tessa Tires.
Okay, never mind. Stop. No more names. Let me just explain something to you. If you have a bad wheel bearing, and as you're on the freeway, as you make a sweeping turn to the right, it's going to go from quiet to a yeah. Or it may be a sweeping turn to the left at highway speeds, you're going to get the yeah. Okay? You have to have that symptom if you have a bad wheel bearing or something wrong in the front end. If you don't get on the I-17 and make those sweeping turns right there at the I-17 and the I-10 corridor, and if you're going highway speeds and you're making a sweeping right and a sweeping left and there's no change in the noise in the front of that car, you are spinning your wheels, so to speak.
Okay.
Number two.
Gotcha.
Go.
What about just driving next to a wall or anything like that where the sound would come off of it?
Good question. There's two wheel bearings.
Uh-huh.
And there's an outer and an inner. Now, go with me. If you're going to make a left turn,
gotcha.
You're loading the outer on the left and the inner on the right.
Sure.
You see my point?
Yeah.
Then
so
when you make a right turn. So we got two wheel bearings
sure.
on each side. In your particular case, it would be a bad idea to buy a $60 bearing because it's going to cost me a lot more than $60. I don't know where you got the $60. I don't know what it is. But mine comes with a warranty, and it comes with a warranty for the part, but you still have to pay the shop to take it in
right.
and out again. Where at my shop and
right.
everybody else's shop,
mm-hmm.
if it fails, then you don't pay a dime. I cover the labor. I cover the part. We're done. I would have
okay.
bet if you would have turned your question around and said, Mark, on my Lexus, I got a bad wheel bearing. Give me a price. I would have guessed between $250 and $350.
Yeah.
And so
okay.
I think your prices are right, but you just look them in the eye and you say, verify it's bad and I want my old part bad. That's what you say. Back. If that's what you say, okay?
Right. I think you're best
now,
suited.
When I was getting new tires, you could hold that wheel and shake it.
But you don't have any noise, right?
No.
Okay.
She's talking about a hub bearing?
Yeah, she's talking about a hub bearing, but now they're shaking the wheel. That can be an upper ball joint. It could be a lower ball joint. It could be a suspension clunk. It can be all kinds of different things. Just moving the wheel isn't good enough for me.
Yeah.
And you know what else? They should have compared the movement to the other wheel. So if they're wiggling the driver's side wheel and it wiggles and the passenger side is wiggling, then why don't we have two bad bearings? So I'm uncomfortable with with some of the shops that you've mentioned, and I'm wondering about their technical ability, and I just, you've got three probably telephone estimates. I suggest you take it to a shop that's been around a long time with a gray-haired guy and say, would you drive the car? Would you look at this? And then bid the appropriate repair. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think if you've gotten three estimates from three different shops that you've physically taken the car to, that's one thing. But if you've gotten one shop to check it out and then you've called two or three others just to get phone quotes, that's a completely different ballgame because they haven't put eyes on it. They're just going off of what you're telling them.
And that's kind of a bad deal because you never want shop B to work off of shop A's diagnosis. Because if you take it to shop B or C and they do the wheel bearing or the hub bearing and this movement's still there, you can't blame the shop you hired to do the wheel bearing and the labor. You got to blame that
first shop.
That's a nice thing. Yeah, I wasn't on my
I
mouth.
Know.
That first, thank you for that though. That first shop, you got to go back to him and he's going to go, wait a minute, you want me to pay for your hub bearing? And you say, yeah, you're the one that diagnosed it and I had shop number two do it. Well, he could have messed it up and you're not going to get any assistance. The little bit more money it's going to cost you to have the shop diagnose it and give you a part warranty and give you a labor warranty, I promise you, is worth the difference. It's
yes.
not worth the $60 worth $300, but the $60 I'm throwing aside. It doesn't have a labor on it.
Yeah.
So anyway, thank you, Christine. Russell, you're up next. How can I help you, Russell?
I just purchased a 1998 Corvette convertible. Very nice car. Previous owner did a lot of extras on it, but one of the things he did was lower the body on the chassis. It rides really low, and it seems to drag the front on everything, even pulling into my driveway. I wanted to see if you had a shop that you would recommend that could raise the body back up on the chassis to, you know, pretty close to the way it was from the factory.
Okay, I'm thinking to myself, let me explain. To raise the body off the chassis would have cost thousands and thousands of dollars. Because we
really?
Have to, absolutely. We have to change the steering column. We have to adapt the steering column because when you raise the body off, you're going to change the steering angle. We have hoses and
wow.
wiring harnesses and everything. I think what's happened here is I think the car's sitting lower to the ground for two reasons. Either they put some smaller springs in it to bring the whole car down, or it's got some really small tires, maybe very wide tires, maybe some rubber band tires, and the tires and the wheels is what changed the ground level difference. We call it ride height. So we go from the bottom of the frame
no.
to the ground. So to answer your question, what part of town do you live in?
I live on the west side.
Okay. I would probably take it to one of the S&S tires because they do suspension work. I would say the car's hanging too low. What is it going to cost me to have you just put it on the rack and have your front end guy look at it and kind of give me an idea on what it would take? But before you do that, here's what I want you to do. I want you to open up the driver's door and there's a white tag there and it tells you what size tire that came with. And then I want you to look at that number and compare it to the number on the tire that you've got. Now, if you want,
I have the actual invoice. He gave me all the invoices of the work he did. I have the actual invoice of the shop that lowered it.
Okay.
Oh. And they said they lowered he told me that they lowered the body on the chassis,
no.
and that's what the invoice says also.
No.
That they didn't change the suspension, but they lowered the body on the chassis.
Okay. I want to tell you that's something that we have never done at my shop, and I want to tell you, we do suspension work every day of our lives. We raise
yep.
trucks, we lower cars, but we've never done a body raise. Why would you do that? Why wouldn't you just lower the suspension? But nevertheless, I've been wrong before. If you've got a body raise, then the only way to get that truck that nose off the ground is to raise the suspension or to drop the body. And I want to tell you something.
Yeah.
I want no part of that bodywork. No part, and I
yeah.
think most of the other shops are going to bail. When you start talking about, I want to change the body geometry to the frame, everybody's going to get a blank stare on their face, and they're going to bow out. And most of them are going to shoot you a price that's three times the normal rate just so you say thank you and walk away. So be careful. But you just get a good suspension guy to look at that, and the question is can we get the nose up another 2 or 3 inches? All right, thank you very much, Russell. Good luck to you. Shannon, you're next. How can we help you?
Thank you for taking my call. I have I think it's an unusual problem. I don't know. I don't know how to identify it or how to describe it very well. It's a sporadic problem. And we're getting occasionally a very loud cabin noise, and it sometimes is accompanied by, I don't exactly want to call it a vibration, but a feeling, very feeling of a rough road, kind of. We're feeling the road more. Seems to be under the passenger and the driver's side in the front. And occasionally just trouble getting it to accelerate, which has been a problem with this car since we got it. So I'm not sure exactly how to, if that is a connection with it or not. But we're just thinking, all I can think of is muffler or possibly transmission. And it just feels like the car is working harder sometimes to do what it used to do. I've had it in two shops, but the problem is because it's very sporadic, they haven't been able to hear it. They don't know how to diagnose it. And right now I'm trying to find out, does it sound to you like it's a muffler, transmission, or something else?
No.
Does it sound like it's safe to drive until it becomes more
What kind prevalent? Of vehicle is it?
It's a Camry 2012.
Oh, wow. How many miles does it have on it?
About 46,000, I think.
No.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking your guesses are wrong. I don't, but let me tell you, I can't tell you that it's not a safety issue until I know what it is. Okay, that's important. So when you look at the big picture, but this is what you really need. How many days between when it does it and when it doesn't do it?
It's not predictable.
Okay, number two.
And it can do it when I'm trying to accelerate maybe into second gear or when I'm trying to get on a freeway.
Okay. What I'm trying to do is to get you to help us diagnose it. So when it happens, I want you to pull it out of overdrive into drive. Okay, I don't care where you're going. I don't care how fast you're going. Grab the shifter and pull it out of overdrive and go to three, probably, right? What's your Camry got on?
2 minutes.
Yeah.
Three? I want you to pull it out of overdrive. I want you to turn off your air on and on, off and on, back and forth. I want to know whether the front wheels turn right or turn left makes any difference. And then when you're going down the highway at 60, 70 miles an hour, and the noise is there, I want you to back off the throttle and pop it into neutral. It's okay, I promise you. Pop it into neutral, let the idle come down, and is the noise there? So you're going 70 miles an hour, you pop it into neutral, take your foot off the gas, your tach drops to 600 or 700 RPM. Is the noise there? And then you just slide it right back into drive and continue on. Okay? That's how what you need to do to help us. Let me tell you a quick story. Someone brought a car in just like that 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. Nobody could find it and fix it. Eddie fixed it in 2 minutes. You know what it was? Mm-hmm. The air conditioning line bracket was loose. And only when the air conditioning was on would the thing go on the fender.
Sure.
So Eddie took the bracket off, wrapped the hose with garden hose, put the bracket back on, noise is gone.
Sure.
And all he did, the lady taught him how to make it happen.
Sure.
It has to be in drive. It has to have the air conditioning on after about 10 miles worth of driving. And that's exactly what he did. So that's what needs to happen with you. You need to do what I ask you to do. And we're looking for what do you do to make it change. And then we'll be well on our way to the diagnostic procedure. But right now, you don't have a good enough symptoms for us to analyze it. And I would strongly suggest you not have anybody guess. It's going to be an expensive proposition, and that's a bad deal for you. Okay, Gilbert, I'm sorry I didn't get you, but you'll be my first caller on the other break, so we've got about 3.5 minutes. So you can go in and tell your wife to make you another beer, or you can just wait for us. 602-508-0960. There's four lines open, 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. This is Andy Salem. We'll be right back.
Where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn.
I can play that coming back off the next break as a rejoin.
Okay, do that.
602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
We got to hit passing gear here real quick.
Okay.
This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Auto.
Calm down. Nobody understood what you just said.
This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Auto. Been around since 1967. You know and I know that Bob at Larry Harker's Auto is one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met.
Yes.
I would venture a guess that he could probably kick my butt. He is really, really good. 38th Avenue and Indian School, auto electrical work, brake service, auto emissions, vehicle maintenance. But they can find problems that start with, I've had my car to 20 other shops and no one can find this problem.
And they have the patience for it.
And he has the patience for it, which is something that, a gene that I'm missing every once in a while.
No.
And thank you for bringing that up.
You're welcome.
Okay. So anyway, Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Ellen runs the front and Bob runs the back. Mm-hmm. A great place. If you live in that area or if you've got one of those, nobody can fix it, then Bob at Larry Harker's is a good guy. Let's go to the phones. We promised Gilbert. Gilbert, good morning. How can we help you?
You can help me. I have a. I think the expression you were looking for earlier was a snowball's chance in hell.
Thank you, Gilbert. Thank you. Thank you.
That I have a 2001. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I have a 2001 Ford Ranger with a 3-liter. It's a 5-speed, and I have had to replace the idle air control valve about 4 times. And what happens is, I'll put a new one in. It's under warranty, so it's not costing me anything. So I'll put a new one in. It'll run fine. And then all of a sudden, in between gears, when I put the clutch in, it'll go up to 3,000 or 4,000. And then when I put it back into gear, well, obviously it's under load. And so the RPMs go where they need to be. And so I have that difficulty. And so I'll put another one in. I'm getting it at a parts store, a very reputable parts store, O'Reilly's, who are the best.
Okay.
And I'll put that in, and then all of a sudden, it'll start up again. So okay. I'll take it off.
Okay, okay.
Go with
okay.
my warranty.
I get it.
Why
I get
is that happening?
Four of them. You got four
I've
of them.
Replaced the throttle control positioner already.
Okay, okay. Number one, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome. Number two, I'm not going to necessarily agree with the very best parts are located at the very best shop, but I can tell you this. There's a good chance that somebody has messed with the what we call the base idle screw. And there's a good chance that the three of them, the TPS, which you've changed, and the idle air control motor, which you've changed, and the throttle blades, which may have been changed, more than likely those have come undone. And you have to synchronize all three of those. So you don't have the ability under any way, shape, or form of understanding how the synchronization works. But basically we are going to have the throttle blades at a particular TPS setting. We're going to accomplish that by either adjusting the throttle position sensor or some other fashion. Then we have to have the idle air control motor seated. And so we're going to be setting up throttle blades, TPS, and idle air control motor. So it's called resetting minimum idle authority. So I think we can all agree that
resetting minimum idle authority, sir?
Yes. Minimum idle authority.
Resetting minimum idle.
Yeah. You can look it up all you want, but like I said, you are best served by having somebody that does it do it again, or somebody that does it for a living. But you're more than welcome to do that. But basically, it's a synchronization, IAC, idle air control motor, throttle position sensor, and throttle blades. The computer has to know what the heck's going on. So if it expects the RPM to be this, and it sees the TPS at this, it goes, why? Because the RPM and the TPS should be synchronized. So that's what it's all about. Now, the other possibility is you've got a vacuum leak that's taken a time to show up. So if you have a vacuum leak, then the idle air control motor doesn't know what to do because the idle's going up. The computer's telling it to shut, but the idle keeps going up because you got a bad PCV valve, a bad PCV valve line, or a bad brake booster. And because the idle's going up and the TPS says zero and the idle air control motor is shut, the computer is completely confused because we introduce air to the motor to raise and lower the idle. So we open the air, we get higher idle. We shut air, we get lower idle. So we're not adding fuel to raise your Ford's idle and your Chevrolet and everybody else. We add air. So if we're at 600 and we want 700, we bleed more air into the motor. Has nothing to do with fuel. So anyway, good luck to you, and thank you for holding as long as you did, Gilbert. Paul, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. I wanted to know your take on a comparison of vehicles, two trucks. Would be a Ford F-150.
Give me the next one real quick. Hold on. Stop. Give me the next one real quick.
Toyota Tundra.
Toyota Tundra.
You started it off saying Ford, so yeah, it was just like
I'm
we were right
you.
To the next one, just joking around.
I'm teasing you. Are you the Ford F-150? Go ahead.
Yes, correct. Yes, and so what I'm looking for is, in, I guess, your opinion on what you would choose. I'm open to a used anything from a 2014 to a 2017.
Okay. Well, I like the idea for used. If you have a heart of steel and you can negotiate, I like that too. I think Carfax is absolutely important. Absolutely important. Mm-hmm. And a pre-sale inspection by the shop that's going to do your work is really important. And if they're not willing to give you those, then walk away. I think what matters to me in a used car environment is I think you'll agree, I want the original owner. I want all the maintenance records. That's what I want. So I want the old gray-haired guy or the young lady that owned it. I want her. I want her because she's a one owner, and I want all of her maintenance records. And that's what makes me really, really happy. The other day, a friend of mine called me, and he said, "Where are you up?" And I said, "I'm up at the ranch." And he says, "I want you to go look at a car in Payson for me." And I said, "I'd be happy to." So I went over there and looked at it. It's a 2015 Ford Focus.
Fusion.
It was a Fusion. And they wanted – hold on just a minute. They wanted – $12,000 for it, and I think we bought it for $10,000. I looked it over good. However, we took it in for – there was a bunch of recalls that had not been accomplished. We took it in to have the recalls done, and the door panels had been ripped apart by some cannibal. And the Ford dealership in the East Valley said that it needs a new wiring harness, and there's all kinds of aftermarket parts in there, so therefore we're washing our hands of it. None of that was true. And they said that there's dirt and dust in the door, indicating it might have been a flood car. And that's not true. So we go in there and we find out, yes, somebody's cannibalized all four doors. However, the last person and the only person that had this is a Ford dealership in New Mexico. And it was taken in for the recall that had not been performed, and that tells me that some young buck tore that car apart, didn't have a clue as to what he was doing, somebody put it back together and gave it back to the customer. Because that's the only other person in this equation. We didn't replace the wire harness. One of the pins had come out of the plug. So to get the door lock to work, we simply plugged in the plug. And inside there was no aftermarket parts. And here's the deal. Turn down your radio. But the idea is that there was no aftermarket parts, and I got to be honest with you, the door regulators and many of the parts inside of a Ford door, a Chevy door, a Toyota door, those only come from the dealership. So to answer your question, I like the Toyota Tundra, but I think you should decide based on what I said. One owner, maintenance records, and a clean Carfax. Never been wrecked. Those are the things you're looking for. Now, if the Ford is a one owner, all the maintenance records, maybe Grandma Moses that never drove over 50 miles an hour and nobody's ever sat in the passenger seat, I'd take that.
I think, too, we've seen quite a few times where the vehicles have a couple they're a couple of years old and they have low mileage, so everyone just assumes, hey, nothing could be wrong with it. It's got low mileage. It's only a couple years old, so they don't get that used car check or pre-purchase inspection, and we end up finding that it's been in an accident that it has. We had one the other day that they had fixed the bodywork but didn't fix mechanical portions, and they had hit something in the right front. So, you know, it's pulling right. It's got all sorts of issues, and the guy had no idea.
And let me tell you something. I remember a lady came in, and she says, "I think you're high at 125 for a used car checkover." And I said, "Ma'am, it's an hour. Mm-hmm. And we're going to put two pairs of eyes on it because we're going to have two of our senior guys look it over." So we gave her a list of stuff that needed to be done to the tune of $900. Mm-hmm. She took it back to the dealer. They did the $900 worth of work based on our list. And she came back and she said, "So I spent a buck and a quarter and I made $900. And I said, "Well, if you're unhappy, I don't know why." And she says, "No, I am very happy. That was worth it." Now, I'm going to guess that more than 75% of the time, that's exactly what happened. The issues we find overwhelm the amount of money that the shop charges for the pre-purchase inspection. And then, of course, if they show repairs on some stationery purchased at the stationery store, if you bring those along, we can look at those, too, to make sure that it does have a new alternator and the air compressor is less than a year old and stuff like that. So the pre-purchase, but I'm not going to tell you not to buy the Ford. I'm just going to put those parameters, one owner, many maintenance records, and a good price. If you go to KBB.com, KellyBlueBook.com, you can punch in the vehicles.
2 minutes.
And you can put private party sale. And then it gives you a speedometer. And the speedometer says if you want trade-in, click here. If you want private party, click here. If you want dealer new, click here. And it gives you this speedometer-looking thing that you can look at all three prices. Now, obviously, if you're going to buy from a private party, you would really like to buy between trade-in and private party number.
They too, on the private party, it will list private party, but then it will say fair to excellent, which they say, you know, less than 3% is excellent. So if you look up private party and then you look at the, you know, fair to excellent, somewhere in that range, obviously you don't want to be a lot higher than excellent because that means it's overpriced.
And you have that, thank you for bringing that up. You can click the three options right there.
Yes.
And it will change the price appropriately.
Yes.
But you have to see the car before you can make that
yes.
conclusion. So that's what I would do if I were you. And thank you for letting us tease you, Paul.
All right. 1 minute.
Ford versus Toyota.
Either one is a good.
I said that.
Great product.
Yeah. All right. Real quick. I'm going to test you real quick. Okay. I took my lawnmower in, and how much did they charge me labor?
What did you have done?
Oh, okay. I had a $9.69 pulley, idler pulley for the belt that runs the blades. I had another idler for $11.81, and I had a $44 flat belt installed, and they put some differential fluid in it. Now, let me ask you this question. What's the relationship between parts and labor, typically?
Which one?
Is it 70-30? Is it 90-10? What's the relationship between parts and labor?
Maybe 50-50?
I'm with you. That's exactly what I say.
Okay.
I say. That's the word I say. Okay. So basically, we have $85 worth of parts.
I would say an hour worth of labor.
At what price?
A lawnmower shop?
Yeah.
I don't know. What are their labor rates? $60-$70?
Okay. Well, let me just educate you there, spring chicken.
Okay.
Okay. $85 in labor and $464 in labor at $145 an hour.
Wow.
Mark got the horn.
Is it that vintage push mower out there?
You know what? I fixed that myself. I paid $30 for, by the way, folks, I have a 40-year-old American 7-blade push mower with clutch back that has brand new tires.
For those of you who have a 12-year-old kid that wants to mow your acreage.
But wait a minute. No. This is for an older lady that has a very small piece of grass. And I bought the mower for $20. I put $35 worth of tires on it, and it works like brand new.
I know, but that would be a good punishment
That's
for a
not
young
the one.
Kid.
This is a riding lawnmower. Can we stay
I
on
know.
Focus here? Okay, this is a riding lawnmower. Honest to God, the bill's $578.06.
You got it.
Yeah, I got it all right.
Yeah.
I'm never going back there. $145 an hour for lawnmower service?
That's a fancy
and
lawnmower.
What's the relationship here? $464 in labor and $85 in parts?
You sound like a bad customer.
I got the horn. So, just remember, here, I'm going to give you this to you. If anybody complains about our labor rate, show them what I paid on my lawnmower.
Sure. I think we missed our break.
Yeah. Oh, I don't care about that. Who cares about breaks? Gil, are you mad at me, buddy? Gil? He's mad at
me.
Oh,
no.
You can tell he's mad at me. Well, before we take a break, let me just tell you this. Air Park Auto is in Scottsdale. Air Park Auto is a good place to go. It's the only place north of Lincoln, between 56th Street, Cave Creek to the north, and Fountain Hills to the east, north of that area, that big block, Air Park Auto. They're on Raintree, just east of Hayden, and they've been around a very long time. Nadine is the sole owner, and she's a female, and she knows cars. Her and Stacy opened it way back in the early 90s when Renee and I opened our new building, but Stacy passed away. But Nadine still is the owner, and she answers to no man. So if you're a lady, that might be exactly the kind of repair shop that you want to stop at. Again, Air Park Auto on Raintree, just east of Hayden. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. I'm going to go ahead and turn off the second microphone because Andy has given up the ghost, And she's decided to go shopping.
I will stay for one more commercial.
Oh, you don't want me to snitch you off. So my wife and Andy's grandmother, my wife's mother, are waiting to go shopping. And so, Andy, you can just stick here for a few more minutes. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurt's Auto Repair, I-17 and Bell, northeast corner. Kurt, Eric, and Jeff are the three predominant guys there. And they know what they're talking about. They're very honest. And I can't tell you how many times I've sent cars in that geographical area to them. And I remember specifically one lady was told by two shops she needed an engine. And Kurt's fixed the problem for less than $100. So I was pretty excited about that because that's the kind of people they are. So if you live anywhere near Bell and I-17, Kurtz is a great place. He's just east of the I-17 on the north side of the road. Kurtz Auto Repair. Let's go to Robert number one, because we have two Roberts. Robert number one, how can we help you?
Well, thanks for taking my call. I just love your guys' show, and especially because it's local. I listen to it all the time. So
thank you for that.
I thought to call in. I'm having a problem. I have a 2010 Malibu LT with a 2.4 liter engine in it. And this past summer, when the temperatures were getting real high, I was using the air conditioner and all that, and it was doing fine. But then all of a sudden, it started kicking into this reduced power mode, where all the different, warning lights that went off, it was reduced power, ESC, traction control, and the thing would, I couldn't drive it faster than 20 miles an hour, and it smelled like it was running real rich.
Okay.
And I've tried to look things up on the internet about it. One of the things I think may be possible is a throttle body sensor, but it also seems to me that this can be a problem that's caused by so many things that I don't know where to start. Help.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You don't have the ability. Here's the deal. The first ESC is electronic stability control. Obviously, I think you said ABS as well. That's kind of a wheel sensor focus, but I don't know if there'd be a reduced power response by a wheel sensor loss. Now, yes, we'd have a wheel sensor loss, and that would knock out your ABS, but your brakes would work perfectly. It's just that you'd be able to go into a four-wheel skid. So the answer is yeah, we're going to go into the computer, and we're going to say, hey, what's going on in your world? And it says, these are the codes I have right now, and here's some historical data. So now we're going to go through those codes, and we're going to look at the throttle position sensor, and we're going to look at the idler control motor. We're going to look at all that stuff, and we're going to be in the car, and we're going to make it happen. But the key you said was it smells rich and probably like sulfur. So we have a rich condition that's throwing us into reduced power, and it could be a stuck injector. It could be a bad fuel pressure regulator. It could be a bad fuel pressure regulator, a stuck injector, or we could have a crankcase full of gasoline fumes that's adding an additional source to the engine because we're going to suck the fumes off the crankcase and burn them again. So you're going to spend between $75 and probably $125, $135 for the diagnostic, and then the shop is going to tell you what we're going to fix and replace, and you're going to say, is this a guess or a fix? And they better say, it's a fix, and say, just write down your diagnosis, write down that it's going to be a fix, and write down that this much money is going to fix it, and then I'm authorizing you to go ahead and go forward, because that's what customers should say. I don't want to be guessing with my money, but that's what I think you have. I think the key here is the smell of rich. That's the key. We need to deal with that first, and then we'll know whether it's going to wipe out all your other problems.
Could this have anything to do with the evaporated the fuel system? Where I had a problem where it was like, for some reason, the fuel system was leaking some of the fumes or something
right,
like that.
Right.
And I had that fixed to wipe that.
No. The evaporative system is nothing more than you have a closed fuel tank, and we put a hose on the top of it, and then we have a vent that we can have air go in, and we're sucking the vapor fumes off the engine and burning them again. The computer has the ability to see when that system goes away. So it turns on your evaporative light, okay, and then we go in, we introduce smoke to the system, we're going to find the broken plastic wire, we're going to find the grommet that's leaking, we're going to fix it, send you on your way. But this has nothing to do with the evaporative system. I would guess that it would be 1 in 1,000, so the odds are pretty small in Mark Salem's world, okay? Alrighty, okay. Thank you very much, and we're going to go to Michael, and then we're going to go to Robert number two. Michael, good morning, how can I help you?
Hey, good morning, Mark. Hey, what do I want to do on a Saturday but work on my car?
Oh, perfect. I'm going to, as soon as I get done here, I'm going to work on my Bobcat. So mm-hmm. you and I will have dirty fingernails for dinner.
Well, it's just the time of the year. I have a 2002 Highlander Toyota.
Okay.
And the air conditioner is stuck in the air conditioning mode on high. None of the controls work. There's no display on it. I Googled my friend, and he said that it could be, it's a typical problem with the Highlander, and it's probably a bad circuit connection.
Okay.
What do you think?
Well, I would go in and talk to the Highlander, and I would also disconnect the negative and the positive battery cables. I would take the two cable ends, not the battery terminals. I would touch them together and walk away. I'd touch them together to the count of 20, and then I'd set them individually on two rags, and I'd walk away for about an hour. That's called a boot, just like your computer. You shut it off, you unplug it, you let it sit, you put it back on, it gives it a fresh new life. That's the first thing I do. The second thing I do is check all the fuses. You said you don't have any instrument or any lights on the front of it, so I'd be looking at the fuses. It could easily be...
That's just on the air conditioner side. The radio works fine, all that. And I know there's two are tied together. And stuff.
2 minutes.
Okay, well, you're going to have at least a blower fuse. So, you know,
yes.
For the blower motor, and you're probably going to have a fuse that runs the condenser fan and the AC unit. I'm guessing based on all the cars in the world that I've worked on. So the answer is I think this is going to entail some diagnostics. I think that you should say, do you have a good Toyota guy? Because this isn't going to be something that everybody works on. And I can tell you clearly, I haven't seen this before in my life. So you're telling me something I've never seen. I don't know if our shop's ever fixed it. So I would be a little leery about thumping my chest and telling you that I'm the best guy for the job. This might be a dealership issue, and I'll tell you why. There's going to be some guy in that shop that's seen this before, if not many of them, because all they work on is your Highlander or your Toyota. So there are times that I will refer someone to the dealer because it's a problem I've never heard, and there's no
One
sense
minute.
In you paying for on-the-job training. So in your particular case, now, here's what I have to offer you. I'd like to learn from that. So I'll give you a free oil change if you'll bring me the repair receipt on that, and that will give us an opportunity to learn from what fixed it. But don't bring me the repair receipt till after you've driven it a week to make sure it is fixed.
Yeah.
All right.
Is there a particular garage on your list that handles electronic controls like this? It's an automatic air.
No, the automatic climate control. No, I think I would
right.
I would type in the Toyota dealerships in the geographical area around you, and I would use the word reviews, and I would find which one of them has the best reviews, and then I would probably go to them. That's my best advice for you. Alrighty,
all right.
I got to run.
Thank you very much, sir.
You betcha. Thank you very much. We'll be back. We're on. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. We got John on the line. The lines are open, 602-508-0960. But before I get John, I got to talk about automatic transmission exchange. ATE, we affectionately call automatic transmission exchange. They've been in the Phoenix area at the same location at 40th Street in Washington since 1968. Phil and his staff are really good transmission people. They all have gray hair, and they've been around a long time. So they don't do just overhauls. They say very few of the cars that come in absolutely have to have overhauls. A lot of transmissions today can be fixed with a part or a reprogram or just a simple repair. So Automatic Transmission Exchange is a good guy, 40th Street in Washington, and if you live anywhere near Central Phoenix, that would be the transmission shop I would suggest you go to. We're going to go to the phones real quick, and we're going to start with Robert, number two. Thank you for holding, Robert.
Howdy, Mark. Thank you.
You bet.
When you talked to that nice lady a little while ago about the used car checkover, it brought to mind something that I'm wondering if I might be able to add a new concept to your amazing vocabulary. How about the term warranty optimization in connection with a checkover? I've got a 14 ES350 Lexus. It's coming up on the end of the warranty period. I'm wondering if it would make sense, if the same logic would apply, to bring the car to somebody like you to do the equivalent of a new car checkover, but really focused on factory-warranted items, so that I could take a list to the dealer, ask them to do the same thing, and say, well, what about this and what about that on your list, and see if I can wedge as many covered repairs that are arguable into that car before that expiration date. Does that make sense?
Yeah, we have that a lot. My warranty's almost over. Please look over the car and denote anything that needs to be done. And I'll go back to my selling dealer, and we will discuss this list of repairs. First of all, you have to understand that there is a terrible relationship. What's that? Gil, what's that word?
Acrimonious.
Yeah, acrimonious. That's a word. Thank you. That's the kind of it's kind of like a husband and wife who's been divorced because one of them cheated on the other. You know, they don't like one another. That's the kind of relationship
I
have. All right. So it's going to be a tough sell. Unless it's really obvious. Now, there are some dealers that I recommend, and there are some dealers I respect. There's a lot more that I don't. But the idea is this. Your idea is very valid. Your idea is very valid. But think about this. They get paid for warranty work, too. So why not take it to two dealers during the warranty period, during the last month of warranty period, and have the first one look it over and fix what it needs, and then take it to the second one and say, you know, I don't know if the list was completed. I'd like another fresh pair of eyes. That way you don't have to pay anything. And you get two different eyes to look at it. And there's nothing wrong with that. I do that. So when my 2012 Dodge was out, then I took it over to Tempe Dodge, and I said, look her over, guys. And they looked at me and they go, do you already have your own list? I said, no, but I will if you don't come up with one. And he goes, okay.
I was going to say, did you wear a disguise?
No, I do lots of business with them. They have treated my referrals like they treat all the rest of their customers in a very nice way. So I'm not going to do a Tempe Dodge commercial, but I'm going to tell you that's the dealership I use for our brand new customer shuttle van and my pickup truck. And so I do like them, but I like your idea, but I think you're going to get caught in the middle of two people that don't like one another, and I think my plan is better than your plan, and that's just have two. Now, the second guy will know your car was just in, but you're just going to politely say, I'd like a fresh pair of eyes. I'm just not quite not comfortable with the first analysis. That's waving the red flag in front of the bull, and they'll come up with something to make themselves look better. Okay?
Gotcha. One more quick question.
Okay.
In your experience, do dealers have, service departments have a real financial incentive to find and fix everything that's arguably covered by the warranty?
Yes. There is a significant motivation to identify warranty items and have them fixed for the technician, for the service writer, and for the dealer. So the answer to your question is there's nothing wrong with that. Yes, that's there.
No, I think that's great. I was worried that intuitively I would think, well, they're just going to try and, you know, save the manufacturer money. And
no.
But if that's a good revenue stream for them, then there would be a financial incentive. I was just wondering if you had that experience.
No, I think that they're going to get paid for what they have. And see, here's what happened real quick. We had the mothership, and we had five levels of people, and then we have the dealership. Okay? So we have all those different levels of people. So then the dealership had a warranty issue that may or may not be inside the warranty. Then they go to step level number four, and then four goes to three, and three goes to two, and da 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 da, and all this happened. So what happened is they flushed out the entire middle, and they gave all the money related to new car sales to the dealers and said, you make people happy. That's what happened. So they got a lot of money. They're a little stingy with it sometimes, but that money flowed, and they have the ultimate say whether they tell you that or not. So that's a good thing. They've gutted all those management positions in the middle, and they've put the responsibility to make people happy right there at the dealership level. And I applaud them for that. So that's the answer. Anyway, got to take a break. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. It's 43 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Every Saturday from 10 to 12, we're here talking about car repair problems. this isn't about my shop. It's about a bunch of shops in the valley that I have vetted for you, and I know that they're good shops and they'll fix your car right. Even to this extent, on the website it says, I promise you'll be happy, but if one of the shops refuses to do what the Better Business Bureau tells them to do, whether it's make a refund or to fix your car, if they say no in the dispute resolution process, then Mark Salem will step up and write a check up to $5,000 for you or fix your car up to $5,000. So I've got my money where my mouth is. And I want to tell you something. I've never spent a dime since 1988. These guys are the best there is. And they have complaints every once in a while. But when we go through the Better Business process, and if BBB says, give them back $62, the shop writes a check. Good guys. They're all at MarkSalem.com. MarkSalem.com. S&S Tire Service, real quick, is a good place. They have three locations in the West Valley, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They have a great line of tires in every different brands. So you can go in there and you can say, here's my car. Would you give me three prices out the door for good, better, best? And then you can decide what's best for you. But everything from wheelbarrow tires to tractor tires and everything in between, S&S has it. Now, they'll balance your tires, and they do alignments and suspension work. So if you've got abnormal wear on your old tires, then that's a good time, the best time, to have your suspension and alignment issues addressed. You don't put new tires on your car and then take it somewhere and say align it, because they can't see the wear on the old tires, so they don't really know what direction to go in. So, S&S Tires, again, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. John, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark, ladies, or actually it's afternoon. I have an AC question for you. I have a 2001 Chevy Astro van. It's my wife's paint van, and we had some AC work done on it that basically replaced the whole system because the filter inside of one of the lines was about a third full of stuff.
Okay.
If I compared that to my filter on my airless or her airless, we're running fine. And then they said I need to replace the whole system. I said, go for it. Now, when we're driving down the road, she drives it like a grandma. I drive it like a work van. I hit 55, 45, and I want to get that thing moving with the AC on 100%. The AC shuts off. When I say it shuts off, it doesn't blow. It doesn't do anything. And when I get up to, I'm going to say 55 or 60, the AC turns back on. That's after I've leveled out, if that makes sense.
Okay.
At a certain level.
All right. I'm going to ask you a couple questions. I want to ask you a couple questions. You say the AC cuts out, but I'm betting that it's probably defaulting to the defrost. And it stops blowing out of the center, but it defaults to the defrost. I want you to drive your car and do just exactly that. And here's the key. When you're driving along at a steady throttle, you have AC coming out of the center vents. But when you stuff that to the floor, we dump all the AC, all the vacuum. And at that particular point, your Astro van has a little ball underneath the right front of the car in front of the right front fender. There's two little vacuum lines to go with this grapefruit-sized ball. You're never going to get to it, so don't even try. Nevertheless, one of them comes off. Somebody's in that area working, and all this AC is in that area. So, and I'll tell you why I know this. We just made the same mistake. We just did it. So we worked on an early 2000 Astro van, and we did a bunch of air conditioning work, and we disturbed the line down at what we call the vacuum pod. So they came in, and they said, you throttle up hard, air conditioning goes away. So we go drive it, and what happens is it goes to the vent up to the defrost. We have three vent positions. We got defrost, center vent, and floor. So it's going to default up there. So it looks like the AC stopped working, but in reality, the blower is still blowing, but it's blowing it up against the windshield. So you need to take it back to them, because I'm pretty sure you're going to be able to say, ever since you worked on it, I'm very happy, but here's a problem that it has now. I think you gave it to me. Now, I promise you that 99% of the time, they've knocked one of the lines off of that vacuum pod that's in front of the right front tire, but up high. And sometimes you have to disassemble some stuff. But also, let me ask you a question. Is this the first time you had major AC work in the 2001?
Yes, sir. They replaced the whole system. Somebody that you guys refer on your their website.
Right.
And we've done work with them many times. But, yes, that's the first time we've actually had any work, and they replaced the whole system.
Okay. You're talking about the orifice tube, and that orifice tube has a screen on each end of it, and it's very fine screen, and that's what fills up with metal that tells us the compressor's coming apart. In the center of that is a small piece of brass pipe with an opening about the size of two human hairs. So maybe 0.003 inch. And that meters the flow of freon through there. But if the filters, the little screen filters on either side of this little bitty tube, if they're plugged up, then obviously it causes lots of problems. So I think you did a good shape, but I would go back to them. Answer this question. Did they give you this problem when they did their work? Did you have it before?
Okay, yeah, I didn't have it before, but I will ask them that.
All right.
And they're a fine company to work with. So I'm not going to mention the name. I don't want to give them a bad rep because every time I've dealt with them,
no. Deal with me. Tell us who they are. It's okay.
Oh, yeah, no. It's Kelly Clark.
Okay.
And the one that was on Bell Road.
Okay.
But they've been great, you know, and I'm sure when I walk back there, I'm still under warranty.
Okay. Well, the key here is this is a repair that should take a seasoned technician about 5 minutes to fix. And all you're going to say to them is on medium to hard acceleration, the air stops blowing out of the center vents, and then when I back off the throttle and it seems like the engine builds vacuum, then it comes back to the center vent. That's it. And like I said, they knocked the line off. That's all that. I mean, I am 99% sure they knocked the line off because that's what my guys did. So I've done that.
Okay.
Thank you, John. Thank you very much. Okay, I want to talk to you about something. Let me tell you something. I'm up at the ranch right now in Payson. A friend of mine's wife got sick up here, and they air evac'd her down to Phoenix, and the helicopter bill was $43,000. So I called a couple of friends of mine. One of them is a pilot for those medical helicopters, and he says, you need to call air evac and ask them about their warranty policy. Not warranty, but their policy. And I said, what do I ask him? And he goes, well, I think that you can pay X amount of dollars a year, and if you have to be flown anywhere in the Phoenix area, and AeroVac happens to be the one that does it, and they're the big ones anyway, he says, then you don't pay anything. So I called AeroVac up, and I said, hey, I'm up in Payson, and I'm getting up in my age, and so is my wife. She's like 80, I think. And so if we get AeroVac down to the valley, do you have a program for that? And she says, yes, we do. She says, it covers everybody at your house, only your house, and we need their names in advance. I said, well, it's just Mark and Renee. And she says, okay. I said, how much is that? She says, $50 a year. I said, no, 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 you don't understand. I want the free helicopter ride. And she says, Mr. Salem, it's $50 a year. And I said, okay, but if my kids come up here and one of my grandkids gets hurt in a quad accident or gets bucked off a horse, she says, they're not covered. And I said, well, how about if I insure them at their houses in Phoenix? She says, they're covered. So I said, for $150, my whole family gets covered. Yes, you do, for 1 year. I said, wow. That's pretty cool. So, and she says, but even better, because if your kids are in Phoenix and they have a car accident, and the kids are your older kids or your grandkids are air evac'd from the car accident, they're covered. Any kind of service in our geographic area is covered. So, what I'm driving home is for $150 a year, I'm covering my whole family in case there's an accident and they need to be air evac'd. They're not going to get a $43,000 or a $20,000 or whatever bill they're going to get. They're not going to get it. Now, there's a method to my madness. I got something in the mail the other day, and it says, as a service to our customers, I'd like to introduce to you an offer. The offer brings home protection plans to owners like you to help guard against the cost and inconvenience of home repairs. Please read the information. So basically it says that this is an electrical company, and you may not be protected, Mr. Salem, in case of an electrical breakdown. You're responsible for the costs associated with the interior and exterior of your house. We offer a complete blah, 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 blah. And in the small writing it says, with multiple service calls per year, up into your benefit amount of $3,000 for exterior electrical components and $2,500 for interior electrical wiring. It costs you $5.99 a month and help protect you. So raise your hand if you've ever replaced the electrical panel on the outside of your house. Raise your hand or call right now, 602-508-0960. Right now, call. You've replaced the 200-amp, 300-amp electrical panel on the outside of your house. Call in. the idea is where the risk associated with this is so small. However, this large electrical company, and rather than disparage both of them, it's APS. This electrical company is selling you something that for $6 a month times 12, $72 a year. And in my opinion, the risk and reward is way out of whack. Obviously, times 10,000 or 100,000 or 200,000 or 800,000 customers, $72 a year is a lot of money. But I'm not buying this warranty. I'm not buying it because the chances of me needing an electrical panel on the outside of my house, a 200-amp panel or 300-amp panel, is just slim and none. I've been around the block. I've never met anybody that's done that. I've never seen anybody that's done that. But they do cover the interior. And they do say, let me pull that back up again here. It says, interior for electrical wiring. The fact of the matter is I haven't had anything that I can't fix or my neighbor guy can't fix with electrical. Because if you have a bad GFI, then you just go buy one new one at Home Depot. But anyway, you can make your choice yourself. But I wanted to show you the difference between a helicopter ride for $43,000, according to Julius and his wife, and he showed me the receipt. And then we've got this electrical problem for $72 a year. The risk and reward is off balance. So I just thought I'd bring that up to you and let you know. Let me tell you something else that's wadded up my underwear. Ford has always told everybody, along with the rest of them, that you have to buy Ford original parts. They've often said that the aftermarket parts aren't as good as our Motorcraft parts. Now remember, Motorcraft, craft, craft. So, in 2016, Ford Customer Service Division launched a brand new part called Omnicraft. It's an all-new brand of replacement parts for all four non-Ford vehicles. Non-Ford vehicles. So they're saying we put our name on a bunch of parts, which allows us to sell parts to our customers with non-Ford vehicles. So we're opening up our service base to non-Ford vehicles. We're not going to put Motorcraft parts on your car. Those are just for Ford. But we're going to put, they're called Omnicraft parts. So notice the craft, Motorcraft, Omnicraft. So we're going to improve our customer experience through competitive pricing, quality, and convenience. Well, I wish Motorcraft was that way. For the Ford launch, Ford focused on most of the commonly requested parts.
2 minutes.
Listen to this, folks. Oil filters, brake pads, rotors, calipers, loaded struts, starters, and alternators. Air filters, brake master cylinders, and wheel hub assemblies. We're talking about cherry picking the parts that we sell the most. We're cherry picking. So what we're doing is we've got this list of parts that we know is in the top 20% of all the parts. So you can do whatever you want to do, but I'm a little upset that all of a sudden Motorcraft is still the king, but we're going to buy these other, in the past, substandard parts, and we're going to put them on your Chevrolets, your Ford, your Toyotas, your Hondas, all that kind of stuff. So it's just playing games. Now keep in mind, there's no part of your Ford that was made in a Ford factory. The alternator is made by Hitachi. The mass airflow sensor is by Denso. The brakes are Bendix. The oil filter is a Champ. The air filter is a Champ. Your battery is by General Dynamics, who makes batteries for everybody.
One minute.
So there is nothing on your Ford that's made in a Ford factory, although your car is assembled in a Ford factory. And your Ford, your Chevrolet, your Toyota, your Honda, your Dodge, your Chrysler is built by parts from the lowest bidder. Just don't forget that. So I get a little wound up because somebody says their parts are better than others. In reality, there's lots of good name brand parts. There's a lot of parts out there that are better than the ones at Chevrolet, Ford, Chrysler, Toyota, and Honda. There's a lot of the parts on their cars that I can buy in a different box. There is a Denso mass airflow sensor where they ground the D off. And Denso is a new company from Nip and Denso. So how does that grab you Ford people that you've got a Nip and Denso mass airflow sensor? The fact of the matter is it's a good product. It's a good piece. It's made by Denso, and it's a company that I buy from. So just be careful about parts. Worry about warranty and price. I'll see you next Saturday.